Welcome to the Scary Movie Project, where darkness meets delight. We review the creepiest films, from classics to new fright. We dive into haunted places, the eerie, the unknown. So grab your popcorn and don't watch alone. From the supernatural tales to the shadows that creep, we're your guide through nightmares that'll haunt your sleep. Tune in, if you dare, to the horrors we dissect. You're in for a thrill on the Scary Movie Project. I cannot imagine falling into a pit of this.
No. And then to make matters worse, she's like wallowing around, she's screaming, and someone comes and slits her throat.
Yeah, so I was going to say, it gets
like the razor wire wasn't enough.
Better, yeah.
The podcast you are about to listen to is an account of the movies which befell a group of horror fans. In particular, Tara Garwood and her intrepid friend, Matt Lolich. Had they lived very, very long lives, they could not have expected, although they would have wished, to see as much of the mad and macabre as we're to see in those movies. For them, an idyllic summer movie became a nightmare, and they loved it. The movies that they watched were to lead to the creation of one of the most terrifying podcasts in the annals of American history. The Scary Movie Project.
Hey peeps, this is the Scary Movie Project, the podcast where we talk about scary movies, share our perspective as filmmakers, prescribe wine for hemorrhages, and bring you our spoilery spoilers. I'm Tara.
And good afternoon, good morning, good evening, depending on where you are, friends. My name is Matt. I will be joining you tonight to discuss the 1977 classic Italian cinema from Dario Argento, number 24 on Bravo's 100 Scariest Movie Moments list, the film Suspiria. Okay? We'll be very clear to note, as we always do when this is the case, this is not the sequel. This is the original 1977 film.
But watch the sequel, too.
Get there, yeah. But anyway.
Yeah. So good. Anyways, so as you mentioned, yes, this is directed by Dario Argento, maker of some great giallo films.
You know, Argento, Bava, Fulci. These are the three, you know, Italian dudes.
The three
made
biggies.
There's more. But these guys made some of the best. I mean, like Zombies, a film I love to death that Fulci did. Mario Bava did Black Sunday. I think we both like Black Sunday. Yeah, but these are the guys that did this stuff, so.
So directed by him, written by Dario Argento, Daria Nicolodi, and Thomas DeQuincy. And I love this. So just to jump right in, the director's original idea was that this ballet school, which is the location we are set in for the most of the film, that this ballet school that the girls are in would have girls that were no older than 12 years old.
Interesting.
But the studio and his producer were like,
they weren't
no,
gonna, yeah.
We will never get a film out that is this violent
with children.
If it's little
no,
kids.
It's not going to happen. Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. So he raised the age, right? The age of how old they would take girls, but he didn't rewrite the script. So that's why all the characters seem really naive and like have kind of childlike dialogue and stuff. Mm-hmm. And he put all the doorknobs at the same actress in height as the actress's heads, so they'd have to raise their arms to open the doors like little kids.
I noticed that, but okay, that's.
I didn't notice that either, but isn't that crazy?
I mean, I've seen it. I watched it again recently. You know, my brain is full of movies that it's kind of live in there, but I hadn't seen this one in a while. So and I wanted to watch it again because it is very good. So yeah.
Oh yeah, it's a great movie. So the music also should mention, which is by the band Goblin.
Yeah. What a great name for
an Italian prog rock band.
What better name? You know, some of these like Scandinavian like death metal bands have like the, you know, like Guar. I mean, like what better name of a band than Goblin? I think there's a band called Samhain. Isn't there a heavy metal band also? I think Goblin.
Yeah,
the music in this movie is killer. I love it.
It's creepy.
Perfect.
And so they actually worked on it with Dario Argento. Mm. And apparently he played it at full blast on
awesome.
Set to like freak out the actors.
No, for real. Like there are some, you know, do I love this movie? I don't love it. But there are some scenes where I'm kind of like, but, you know, when I start hearing like the soundtrack to it, I'm like, all right, you got me in here now. This is for real. Like, this is good. Yeah.
The soundtrack really brings a lot to it.
I think it's kind of like a Halloween situation where, yeah, maybe it's spooky as is, but when you drop that track in there, oh man, it's a whole nother story. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. Okay, so we open on voiceover with that's telling us basically that a young girl, Susie Banyan, went to a German ballet academy from New York. So she's American. She's gone to Germany mm-hmm. to go to this ballet
academy. Do
they ever
say where in Germany this is, by the way? I don't remember that.
They do. It starts with an F.
Frankfurt? I
think. No. It's not one that I recognize.
Yeah, I don't remember they ever said it. But
Yeah, it's not a place that I specifically recognized.
Just asking.
We see her in the airport. She goes out into the pouring rain. And as she's like walking out, like they have these weird like shots of the doors, the automatic doors that open and close. Yeah. Remember that? Yeah. It's like cuts to the doors and has this weird music, then cuts back to her and then cuts the doors and then cuts to her. It's very weird and unsettling.
Good
but
way
doesn't
to
seem to have much purpose.
It's an unsettling movie, I guess, maybe. So they like to.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't like lead to anything though. There, nothing scary happens with the doors. Like it's just
happening,
unnerving. Yeah. So she goes out into the pouring rain. She gets soaked trying to get a taxi. Finally, one stop, she gets in. And oh god, the blue and red light on her in that taxi, like as they're driving.
That's one of the things.
So
that's
good. People try to do that so much.
That's one
now.
Of the things about this movie is it's incredibly, you know, rich in like in color and palette and things like that.
Yeah, definitely. So apparently, Dario Argento made the cinematographer watch Disney's Snow White because he wanted to use that color palette.
I'm glad that you said this. I was going to bring it up later, but I have heard that somehow he tried to model this movie after the Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Is this true then?
I don't know that. I just know that
maybe that's what
he wanted, that color palette. Maybe, and so he had him watch it or
that's,
something like that.
I just heard that was what it was about. I don't know if that's what they meant. Maybe that is what they meant. They just wanted that.
Yeah, I think that might be what they
either
meant.
I'm stupid or I don't know, but I'm trying to watch the movie and I'm not seeing how this follows the Seven Dwarfs story. So
no, it doesn't. It doesn't.
I don't see a witch biting an apple. I don't see any of these, you know, so I guess that maybe that's what they meant then. That's interesting. I'm glad you said that though. That's really cool.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. Yeah. So I also noticed as they're driving to the academy that as they drive through the forest, I saw the shadow of a crew member on one of
is
the
that
trees.
Right? Oh, okay, I didn't catch that. That's good.
I love stuff. I just was like, wait, like that. There shouldn't be a person standing out there.
Yeah, I love stuff like that.
Yeah, that's I don't catch those often, but when I do, I'm like,
that's good.
Hold on. So they arrive at the school just as another woman is running out.
Right.
And so she goes in the intercom and tells them she's here, and someone tells her to go away. Sounds very scared and upset and tells her to go away. And so she gets back in the taxi. And now Pat, the girl who had just left the school, is running through the forest. And she goes to an apartment building with this like, oh my god, this building has the wildest Art Deco decor. It's so cool looking. Right? I don't know how these kids who are like in college basically afford these places that are amazing like this.
Parents, of course.
Or if it's just Germany
that's how things look.
But yeah, so she goes to this apartment building to stay with a friend. And then her friend takes her into the bedroom so she can like get ready for bed. And a window bursts open and Pat like freaks out. And her friend is like, oh, it's just the wind. And she leaves her to get ready. Pat uses a lamp to look out the window. Okay, and so she's like looking out the window. And there's like laundry out there. So it's like flapping. It's really creepy. And all of a sudden, she sees a pair of eyes. And then an arm crashes through the window and grabs her head. And then this attacker stabs her, comes in and stabs her in the heart. By the way, I'm wearing my heart necklace for it. See? Okay. Hearts. stabbed in hearts, and gets a rope around her neck. And then she falls through the stained glass window to hang over the apartment building's lobby. Like... and her friend, who's been like calling for help and everything, her friend is down in the lobby now, and she gets killed by falling glass.
Yeah.
Womp womp.
I think it's, you know, I was watching someone in one of these shows, maybe it was the Bravo show, talk about, you know, these movies and how like Argento stuff and these horrible things are happening to people, but they're happening in the most beautiful way. Like that's what this stuff is almost about. It's like this incredible stain. Yeah. These beautiful colors and these stained glass window. And it's just like,
yes,
rich palette of just color. And yet this person is like, yeah, like you said, stabbed to death and hung and dropped out to die. But it's so interesting.
And isn't this the one, don't we actually see her heart?
I don't remember.
It's either this or another murder in this movie where he's actually, there's the attacker is stabbing into the heart and you actually, like, the chest gets ripped open and you can see the heart being stabbed into. So the next morning, a blind man arrives at the Ballet Academy and he goes inside, leaving his seeing eye dog outside. And Susie follows him, and we'll find out shortly that he is the piano player for the Ballet Academy. So Miss Tanner, one of the teachers there, tells Susie that they expected her last night.
Not DJ Tanner, though.
No.
Or Stephanie Tanner.
Or Stephanie, no. Rude.
Neither one.
How rude.
Great show.
That's right. That's how it goes. It's been a
come
long
on,
time.
I know.
So Miss Tanner tells her that they expected her last night, and she introduces her to Madame Blanc. Madame Blanc, her young nephew lives there too with them. And she tells her that a student who has just been expelled was murdered last night. And so with everything going on and all this stuff, they don't have room for Susie right now. So she has to stay with a third year in town. So Mrs. Tanner takes her upstairs to the locker room, introduces her to the girls. Oh, and on the way up the stairs, I love this, they meet Pablo, who works at the school.
Yes.
And she says something about, oh, so handsome now that you have your teeth fixed. Like, and he's a terrifying looking man. Like, he is not handsome. He is horrifying. She's like, oh, so handsome with your fixed teeth. But he does have beautiful teeth.
But he's quite scary.
He does have perfect teeth. So Olga introduces herself to the girls and another girl. Olga introduces herself to Susie. And then another girl lets Susie borrow her dance shoes. And then there's Sarah, who's American too. And she's nice to Susie. And Olga says something about that S names are for snakes. And Sarah gets really upset. So they clearly have like not a great relationship. And then we're at Olga's apartment. Susie's getting settled in, and there's a handsome young man from the school who brings her bags to her. Olga tells Susie that the boy is short on money, so he has to do errands for the school because he can't afford room and board. So then Susie tells Olga that the girl who left the school the night before had said something about secrets and a flower, iris or lilac, maybe. So like we're getting a little like tidbit that will come back later here. And then I guess it's the next day, Madame Blanc tells Susie, oh, a room is free at school now. But Susie's like, well, I'd really rather stay with Olga. And I love it. Miss Tanner comes over and is like, you're very strong-willed. My compliments. And then in the hallway, this older woman is polishing silver with the young boy standing behind her. And she flashes the knife she's polishing in Susie's eyes. And Susie like gets all woozy. Which is like, which makes you think immediately like there's something weird going on here. Right? Like, and we know, of course, now we know that having watched it, that they're witches. So like, is she doing some sort of spell? Is there, what's going on here? So she's all woozy. And Susie goes in and joins the ballet class. And the blind man's playing the piano for them. And Susie asks Miss Tanner if she can rest for a moment because she's all dizzy. But Miss Tanner won't let her. And Susie passes out, with a nose and mouth bleed, which seems rather dramatic for passing out.
Maybe doing a bunch of cocaine or something. Who knows?
Like a nosebleed, right, though, is one thing, but like when your mouth is bleeding, that's really serious.
It's not a good thing.
That is no joke. So I don't know. I guess they were just trying to for it to be like really dramatic, but I was like, holy crap.
Yeah, I would not want that to happen.
Whose mouth bleeds when they pass out?
I would not want that to happen to me.
Like, God, does she have TB or something?
Ugh.
So the teachers force Susie, they get her in bed in the room that's open for her now, and they force her to drink a jug of water, and the doctor gives her a shot of something and says she needs to eat bland food for a week and have a glass of wine at dinner because she's hemorrhaged.
Everybody. Have a glass of wine.
Which he makes, but he makes it sound like it's not the big deal. Like, oh, it's just a hemorrhage. It's like,
have some alcohol. I mean, how could that possibly
drink some alcohol.
Make things worse.
Well, this is why we prescribe wine for hemorrhages.
Fine.
So he tells her to eat bland food, have a glass of wine at dinner. And then we found out Olga's friend Sonia is Susie's next door neighbor. And so Sonia comes over and like meets her. And when Sonia leaves, Susie starts brushing her hair. And she finds a maggot in her hair.
Yeah.
And then a bunch on the comb. And then they're like all over the ceiling and all the girls are covered in them.
Disgusting.
By the way, for the wide shots of the maggots falling from the ceiling, the crew is dropping grains of rice.
Okay, that works. Yeah.
Down from the actresses above their heads. So don't worry too much. It wasn't a
bunch
of maggots just falling on top of them.
It's all good.
It was rice.
Not to worry.
It was rice. Yeah. So Miss Tanner goes up to the attic to see what's wrong, and the male ballerina, I forget his name.
Yeah, I can't remember either. I don't know.
I have it somewhere. I forget what it is offhand, though. But she tells this male ballerina who runs errands for the school, that guy, that the maggots are coming from a case of food. And then she apologizes. Madame Blanc is apologizing to everyone, and she tells them they can stay on cots in the ballroom.
It's a big slumber party.
Yes. And so like the girls are in one section and there's like sheets dividing them. The boys are in another section and the male ballerina like peeks over the sheet that separates their sides and makes kissy face at Susie.
God.
And Sonia's like, well, I thought he was, you know, and Sarah gets mad at her. Then Susie can't sleep and we're treated to more spooky music from Goblin, which is great. And then Sarah is next to Susie, and she wakes up.
A soundtrack to that.
It's a great soundtrack.
That might be one to listen to. That's awesome. I'm gonna.
It's with all the whispering in the music, like the like.
Yeah, I'm gonna YouTube that.
It's creepy. So Sarah wakes up because she's hearing this weird snoring, and she tells Susie it must be the directress of the school. So the teachers had already said the directress is out of town. She's not here. But she's like, I recognize that snoring from when the directress was here once before and slept in the room next to me. And that's her. They're lying. She's here. So another point to remember. The next day, Miss Tanner tells Daniel, the blind piano player, that his dog bit the young boy who lives there, the nephew. And she yells at Daniel and she kicks him out. And that evening, Pablo brings Susie dinner again. So she's having dinner in her room instead of eating with everyone else. And then later that night, Sarah comes in. She listens for the teachers leaving for the night with Susie. And Susie says, well, their footsteps aren't going out. They're going somewhere inside the school. And Sarah's like, wow, where do they go? But Susie's like having trouble staying awake. She's falling asleep. So Sarah counts the teacher's footsteps to find out where they're going. And she's like making notes. And we've got that nice blue and red lighting scheme again at night.
Beautiful.
So we're getting treated to that as well. And then Daniel, the blind piano player, is at a bar where some men are dancing on a table in traditional outfits, in the like little like yodel outfits.
Lederhosen?
Yes, Lederhosen. That's the word. And he and his dog leave and they start walking home. And as he crosses this large plaza, his dog starts barking.
This is a bizarre scene.
this is bad. So he stops and he yells out, "Who's there?" And no one answers. But we hear like birds or bats, something flapping their wings while he stands there all frozen. And then his dog just suddenly leaps up and tears his throat out. And two policemen, like across the way, spot the dog eating him, and they like run over. They're like, "Oh my god!"
It's funny because the dog is like, "Oh shoot, someone's coming to get me. I'm out of here." He just like takes off.
Yeah, the dog's like, "Peace.
I'm out. They're not gonna get me."
So now the ballerinas the next day are like all talking about the deaths, and Susie goes to see Madame Blanc and tell her what she heard Pat say when she left the academy, and Madame Blanc sort of, you know,
she's what
fobs her off. She's not like receptive. So Susie and Sarah go swimming in the indoor pool, and apparently the director told them to, he wanted it to be a very calm scene. So he told them to, not to disturb the water too much while they were swimming, which I don't know how you control how much, like, unless you're actually a swimmer. How do you control how much water you like, how much wake you make while you're swimming?
That took a few takes.
Yeah, I don't think I'm a talented enough swimmer to do that. But anyways, so Sarah tells Susie that Pat was trying to tell her something when Susie arrived, and that she, Sarah, was the one who told Susie to go away that night. And that Pat had made all these notes about the teachers and given them to Sarah before she left. And so that night, Sarah wakes Susie to tell her the notes are gone, but Susie can't wake up. And so Sarah shows Susie the only thing she has left, which is a scrap of paper, and asks her, "Do you know anything about witches?" And Susie falls back asleep because she's obviously being drugged. Like, she can't stay awake. And Sarah hears like giggling outside of Susie's room. So she turns out the light and listens at the door. And then the light turns on over. So Susie's got two doors in her room on like opposite walls. So the light turns on over Susie's other door, and Sarah sneaks out the like front door. And as the other door opens while Susie's sleeping, Sarah runs down the hall trying to get away. But everywhere she turns, someone seems to be coming. And so she goes up to the next floor. But she, and this part, oh, I hate this part. she sees a light up there. And then she hears heavy breathing. And something shows up behind her, and she screams and breaks through a glass, like, indoor window. So it's, like, into another indoor room. And she runs into another room. She throws the latch on the door, and the other person uses the knife to like lift the latch. So they've like inserting a knife in between the door and the door frame. They're trying to lift the latch, and Sarah's like stacking boxes to climb out this small high window. And she gets out the window and she jumps into the next room.
You're about to mention my favorite part of the Here
it goes. Here it comes. She lands on a bed of razor wire.
It's not even a bed. It's like a room. It is a pit of razor wire.
Yeah. Like when I say a bed of razor wire, I mean like all over the floor.
It is
like stacked like 3 feet high razor wire.
To watch.
Laser wire would be
interesting too. There could have been some in there. That scene. Okay. So that is, did you ever see any of the Saw? Well, you ever seen Saw Part 2? More specifically,
no.
Have you seen? Okay, so Saw movies are just really just creative ways to kill people. Basically, is what happens in these movies.
Yeah, which is why I haven't seen it. I'm not really interested.
They're pretty awesome. Some of them are pretty insane. One of them is this one woman. She falls into a pit of needles, of like hypodermic, like, you know, vaccine needles, and it's got to be taken from this, I would think. That's pretty awful because she just gets up because you look at this scene and you can't get up because you know every time you put a hand somewhere, it's probably going to land on a wire or something sharp.
And that's what Sarah's doing. She's like wallowing around in there, like trying to get out, and like everything she does just gets her more tangled.
And you know, you might fall, you might slit your face open, you could slit your throat open. Watching it is, I mean, it's so uncomfortable seeing someone that is so scary, because like, what if you, that makes me nuts.
It's so bad.
I remember thinking, I was, I think right after I watched a few weeks ago, I was taking a walk, and there's like a like a county building nearby where I'm going, and they had, they don't, you know, they have, it's a county property, they have vehicles back there, but they have a bunch of razor wire on their fence. And I remember walking by and thinking, I cannot imagine falling into a pit of this.
No. So, and then to make matters worse, she's like wallowing around, she's screaming, and someone comes and slits her throat.
Yeah, so I was going to say, it gets
like the razor wire wasn't enough.
It gets even better, yes. So watching it though, and the shot, like, it makes you watch this forever. Like, it's just this shot, and there's no camera movement. It just stays there, and you have to watch her, like, get ripped apart by this stuff. And then,
Well, and apparently, you know, it wasn't razor wire, well, obviously, but it was wire. And apparently she did get, like, pinched and hurt from it.
And then, of course, it's not bad enough. Then, you know what, we're just going to slit your throat at this point now. So there you go. Now you're just dead.
Right.
That scene to me is, like, it's just so gruesome. I love it. It's my favorite scene in the movie. Woo!
It's a really good scene.
Oh, that is intense, boy.
But it's...
Oh, man. That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, that scene from Saw 2 where she's in the pit of needles, that has to be, like, totally rip that off from there. I mean,
Gotta be. It sounds like it. So the next day, Susie is looking for Sarah, and Miss Tanner tells her, well, you know, Sarah packed her bags and left early this morning.
These people keep leaving. What's going on here?
And Susie calls Sarah's friend, who I guess she told her about at some point, Dr. Frank Mandel.
Frank Mandel.
And she asked, or Mandel?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know how you say it. And asks to see him sometime today because she's really worried about Sarah. So this, by the way, he's played by Udo Kier.
Yeah, Udo Kier, who, of course, and Ace Ventura fame, I believe, and Rob Zombie's Halloween, to name two of them.
Right. And so, well, so his appearance was so rushed that he didn't really, like, get to read the whole script very well.
Awful.
So the movie, like, you know, the way they film these movies, like, they have people speaking English, people speaking Italian,
people
speaking
German. I was
gonna get to
that part
later, yeah. And so they just speak in whatever language they speak, and nobody understands each other. They just say their lines at each other. And they didn't even really record sound because of it. Because they're just going to dub it later, so why bother? So, for him, because he didn't really get a chance to memorize his lines, they had a crew person laying on the ground, like behind the stone bench, and like telling him his lines to say to her.
Pretty cool.
So they had someone there, like, say this.
Yeah, exactly.
And he would like say the line. So how's that for acting? Like, he doesn't even know the lines. Hey, he's just, like, getting them said to him, and he just says them to her.
Can't be better than that. Stand on your mark and just, read off what someone tells you. How about that? Hey, I'm cool with that.
Yeah. So he tells her that Sarah might be with her father and that he treated Sarah a few years ago when her mother died. And he tells her that Sarah learned that the Academy was founded by Helena Marcos, who went by the name of the Black Queen.
Yep, I love it.
And studied the occult in the late 1800s.
Yes, this is when I got like, ooh, this is exciting.
Yeah, and he tells her Helena Marcos died in a fire in 1905, and then the school started teaching dance instead of the occult, like shortly after that.
Can I go
to
a school that teaches the occult, please?
And I know,
I will
right?
I go right now.
And so Frank then introduces Susie to Professor Milius, who tells her about witches and what they can do, and that a council of witches can work together.
I love that scene. It's kind of cool.
And they have a leader, and if the leader's killed, they're all powerless.
So it's kind of cool that they were the way I like that scene when he's kind of explaining how things work and stuff. That was neat. I like that scene.
Yeah. And so he, because he spoke German and Jessica Harper, who played Susie, didn't understand any German. He would tap her on one of her legs with his foot, like right out of frame, to cue her to speak when he was finished.
That's so interesting, isn't it?
And she said it was hard for her to like keep a straight face and not flubber lines.
Yeah, that would be an interesting. I mean, you know, lines on a set can be hard enough, but that's really interesting to think about the languages like that. Yeah. So is she American or is she British?
I believe she's American. Okay. I believe she's American. So that night, Susie looks at her wine, like she gets her food and her drink. She looks at her wine and very smartly decides not to drink it.
Good move.
And she goes and she looks for, that's his name. Mark is the young boy, the young male ballerina who works.
The studly young man.
The studly young man who she likes and who likes her. So she looks for Mark, but she can't find him. And so she asks the housekeeper where everyone went. And the housekeeper tells her, well, they all went to the opening of the Bolshoi without her.
The Bolshoi.
And so Susie's like, why'd they go without me? Yeah. So Susie calls Frank, but the line goes dead in the middle of the call. And then Susie takes her food and wine into the bathroom and she pours out the wine, like all the food they left for her. And when she turns the lights out, she sees two blinking lights. And she opens the door and a bat attacks her. And then it's flying around. I mean, I don't think it's bats aren't attacking you, really. They're just freaking out themselves, I think. But so it's freaking out and it's flying around her and in her hair. And it finally lands on the floor and it's like weakly flapping. And she covers it with a towel. She grabs a stool and she smashes the ever living shit out of it and goes back to her room.
That's great.
And I don't know what that has to do with anything, but holy.
She doesn't like bats. Holy. Is what that has to do with it.
She kills that bat so hard.
Yeah, basically.
Like, she just, she just turns it into paste. And then she goes back to her room and she hears footsteps and she starts counting them, right? She remembers that Sarah was counting the footsteps. So she starts counting the footsteps and then she leaves her room to find out where the teachers go at night. When she gets through the second door, she starts hearing laughter and it's the housekeeper. So she has to like run past the door to the kitchen and hide and then come back out and continue on. And she ends up in a room with carpet and says to herself, oh, that's why the footsteps stop here. So she looks for another way out of the room. And in one corner, she's like looking in a mirror and behind her, she sees three irises. And she remembers what Pat said that we learned in the beginning of the movie. Where she said something about a secret, an iris or and a flower. She said, the secret I saw behind the door, three irises, turn the blue one. So Susie turns the blue iris and she finds herself in a dark hallway and she continues on past this writing
and
all over the
walls.
The
music in this scene is pretty fantastic, isn't it? I remember. Yeah.
Yes. It's more fantastic music.
You're really like getting pumped up. Yeah. You're really into it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good. And so finally, and you're amped up. You're like, oh God. Every corner she turns, so what's going to happen?
Yeah, right. Down this hallway. Where are we? Where are we? What's happening? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome.
So she finally gets to the end of the hallway and she sees the teachers talking. And she hears Madame Blanc tell the teachers that the American girl must vanish. Understand?
That's pretty good.
And then says, thank you. And then she says, Helena, give me power, sickness, away with trouble, death. And Susie turns away and sees Sarah dead, pinned to a table. Like her hands are nailed to it. And Pavlo starts heading her way and she just runs into another room and she hears the weird snoring. And someone's laying on a bed behind a curtain. And Susie knocks over this peacock statue that's in there. And the figure wakes up and asks, who is it? Who's there? And she says she knows it's the American girl come to kill Helena Marcos. And Susie picks up a letter opener, like a big ass, like foot-long letter opener, and pulls back the curtain. But there's nothing there. And by the way, the woman playing Helena Marcos, apparently, she was a 90-year-old former prostitute.
All right.
Who Argento found on the streets of Rome.
Okay.
So, and then
that's
I think the voice,
awesome casting.
The voice of Helena Marcos was done by Daria, whatever her last name is, who was one of the writers and was also Dario Argento's girlfriend at the time. So then a dead Sarah comes in with a knife
scary,
raised.
Right. What is that about?
And Susie's like looking around, freaking out. And then suddenly she sees the outline of the witch because the witch has been invisible. Mm-hmm. Right. She sees the outline of the witch and she stabs her in the throat. And so now we see Helena Marcos and she dies and everything starts falling around, falling down around them. And in the other room, the other witches are dying. And Susie just runs back out of there, like through all the hallways as everything's falling all over the place. So she goes down the stairs, she goes out the front door, and it's storming again. And she walks away from the academy as it bursts into flame.
Good timing. Get the hell out of there, yeah.
So that finale of the film was actually inspired by a dream that Daria, the co-writer, had once, where she encountered an invisible witch. Ooh. And said that there was a panther in the room with her in that dream that exploded.
Really?
And so in the film, there is a porcelain panther that explodes.
Okay. So they
like, I think while everything's falling down and
okay,
stuff.
So they put it in there. All right.
Yeah. So that's the end of the movie.
And then
we got through that one pretty quick.
Isn't there a cool way that they don't say something, but it's an interesting ending. Isn't there some writing or something somewhere that says you've just finished watching like Suspiria or something like that? Doesn't it have some
interesting
way of saying that? Maybe I'm making something up.
Maybe there was and I just didn't notice.
Yeah, okay, I don't know, maybe. But yeah.
I don't always notice everything.
Yeah, I thought maybe it was on a platform I was watching and it was its own thing and it just said you've finished watching this whatever, but
So now this film though is the first part of a trilogy of movies about the three mothers. Yes. So this is about the mother of sighs or Mater Suspiriorum. Mm-hmm. So Suspiria means sigh or to sigh or something like that. And then there's Inferno and Mother of Tears.
I have not seen the others.
So I haven't either, and I really want to.
Well, go for it now.
I got to find them and see them. And it's the only installment in the Three Mothers trilogy where the witch isn't referred to by her Latin title.
Mm.
So Helena Marcos is the mother of sighs, but they don't refer to her that way in the first movie.
Okay. So don't forget.
But later they'll call her Mater Suspiriorum.
Argento, if you want to see more of him, go watch Opera, which is like maybe his best movie, they think.
Yes, Opera's fantastic. Yeah,
Inferno, Mother of Tears, like you said, Deep Red. He's made some other movies like that. So, and then also his daughter, right? Is Asia? Is it Asia or Asia Argento? Is his daughter.
I
forget how you pronounce
it. I always said Asia, but I might be wrong.
She was dating Tony Bourdain before he died. That's interesting. So they were a thing for a while. So there's your just random info on,
well, there you
on
go.
The Argentos. But yeah, he's a very talented guy. I think that, for some people, okay, so I was going to ask you what you think of, how does the language, the ADR, the dubbing, does that bother you when you're watching it? Does it affect you in any way? Because it's so, perfectly read. It seems out of place because it's not really happening a lot of the time. So it's weird in a way.
Yeah, I mean,
it doesn't bother me. It's kind of silly sometimes.
It doesn't bother me in this movie. There are times when dubbing has bothered me. In this movie, it does not.
I think for me, the parts where the teacher's talking to her is kind of annoying. It's almost like too proper and it's almost too perfect. But, I don't know.
Yeah, and see, I thought of that as okay because I thought that they were speaking English to her and it wasn't their first language. So they were, like, that's how I thought of it. Like, she's in Germany, they're speaking English to, they're ostensibly speaking English to her, which isn't their first language. People who are speaking not their first language often speak a little bit more, a little bit more upper crusty because upper that's crusty. How they've learned the, they've,
I like that.
because they've learned the language properly and they're not like speaking slang stupid. And stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
So I don't know. It didn't bother me. Mm-hmm. I think also it didn't bother me because this film is so strange and heightened reality anyways, that it doesn't stick out as much as, like, say, a really naturalistic, like, modern movie where all the dubbing is weird. Yep.
Okay. I think for a lot of people that can be, like kung fu movies and things like that, where it can just be...
Oh, yeah. When I have my option, I watch subbed. I watch subtitled movies, not dubbed. Okay. So, but yeah, for this, it doesn't really bother
me
too much. Yeah,
it didn't bother me. I didn't have it. It didn't mess me up or anything. It didn't affect the anything. Yeah, other than that, no, it's, that razor wire scene is unbelievable. That really gets me. That's such a, the shot at the beginning of falling through the glass, these are, like I said at the beginning, these are movies like awful things happening to people in the most beautiful ways is kind of how these are done. And, a lot of people don't like to watch foreign movies, whatever subject it may be. But, I think I heard somebody say they're foreign because that's what they are to you and I. We're not used to them. They are foreign.
Right.
And they're a little bit different. And, the story is there. I think a lot of people maybe say that didn't piece together well, and it's a great idea, but it wasn't executed very well. I don't love this movie. I think it's good. Like I said, the barbed wire scene is like a famous scene for me. But it's well done, and the music is outstanding.
Yeah,
I love that. And he's a master of some of these the colors. The rich colors, the palettes.
Yep.
Like that's what sticks out
visually.
To me.
Yeah, and right. Like his visuals and his music that he does with Goblin
outstanding.
Are what elevate the film really.
The acting is they're not gonna win an Oscar. But the stuff he adds into it, his design is great.
The acting doesn't throw me because the film is the movie is so it's so weird anyway.
It's like you said, the buildings they live in and the scenery is, so nice. It's so beautiful that, I think it takes away. It adds so much. I won't say it takes away from anything. Mm-hmm. It adds into what makes it so great.
Right.
I was going to say take away from, the fact that it's a film you're not used to watching. But
Right.
Yeah. No, it's good.
So here's an interesting one. So, Dario Argento was interviewed for a book, Bodies of Desire and Bodies in Distress.
Okay.
And so in it, he says, so I want to know what you think about this. He says, I wasn't primarily interested in the theme of motherhood, but rather in women's lives. In fact, if you want to give a deeper reading of the film, it can be seen as a vaguely lesbian story where lesbianism has a certain importance, or more precisely, where the relationships between women are sometimes of a lesbian nature and are characterized by power struggles. There aren't any male characters to speak of in the film. All there is are power relations between women.
Yeah, okay. So that, there are no male characters. It's just the whatever dude he that you never see very much. And the piano player, whatever, that's it. Yeah, it is an all female cast.
I mean, I definitely see that it's a very female centric movie.
But I don't see,
the lesbian thing.
I was going to say, I'm with you. I don't really, maybe you can make the argument when they're in that one scene where they're having the sleepover thing, maybe they get intimate or whatever, but nothing really ever happens. So I don't know.
Well, but there's not even, they don't even get intimate.
No. I mean, as the viewer, you're thinking this might happen here, but it never does. Right.
Oh never yeah, does. No, but I'm trying to think if there's a more of a way in.
I don't.
Spiritually, metaphysically, that it could be lesbian. I'm not. I don't know.
If that's what he wanted to do, I don't think he executed it properly. Maybe, but I can get the idea of it. I can get behind it. It's just that I don't think.
Or is he thinking of it in a kind of outdated mode of thinking that lesbians are powerful women, and so it's.
I don't know.
I don't know. I'm trying to I can't.
No, there's nothing concrete,
Dario, tell us what you mean.
it's vague. I'm with you. There's no concrete explanation for it there, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't get it. But I thought it was interesting that he said that, and I was kind of sort of
everyone's perspective on it.
Cogitating on it.
Everyone's perspective is different. He may have thought he nailed it. I don't think he did, but, hey, whatever.
Well, he may also have not tried to and then been putting that on it afterwards. They're I guess it's kind of
subconscious thinking that you thought you did this, but you didn't. Or,
I mean, just because it's about a lot of women and it's about women in power and power struggles between women, that doesn't make
doesn't
it a
mean
lesbian.
It's a bunch of lesbians.
Movie.
No, it really, really like, doesn't.
Not even vaguely. That doesn't make it vaguely lesbian. I don't know. I didn't get that.
I can't get inside his head to figure that one out, but that one you can.
Well, I was hoping maybe you would, because I couldn't either.
Yeah, that's one you can, you know, noodle around with for a while and see what you come up with. Google it and see if you can find anything deeper on it.
Yeah, I was hoping one of us would know what he meant, but yeah. It's not me, and I guess it's not you
either. I
get
maybe where he's trying to go, but I'm not really grasping it either. So,
yeah, I wasn't getting it.
You know, we know what though. I mean, like, every movie ever, you know, look, it's always about some other idea or it's about some story that someone else thought. I mean, look at like The Exorcist, which people think is like the scariest movie ever, and you know, you got William Friedkin saying horror movie. I didn't even make a horror movie. It's like, what? What are you talking about? So these folks always have these different ideas and different meanings of things that we know. Everything is subjective, I suppose, right?
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's Suspiria. Yeah.
Go watch it.
Oh, no, there was one other thing I wanted to say. The remake. I have not seen it.
I guess I feel like I should probably, now that we've reviewed, I should probably go watch it, I suppose.
I think you should. The remake is...
Who made it?
Fantastic, I think.
American Film Company or was it Italian?
I believe American.
Okay.
And I think it's, is it Tilda Swinton in it?
I don't know.
I think it's Tilda Swinton. But basically, I suggest anyone who wants to watch the new movie, I think you should watch the old one first. Because it informs the new movie very strongly. Even though the new movie... ends up not quite the same movie. I don't want to spoil that one because we're not talking about it right now, but it ends up being a different movie, but it's very much informed by the first one. And I think you should watch them both. I think they're both really good, really interesting movies.
Okay. Yeah. I will probably try to, is that 2018? It's fairly new, right?
I believe so. Yeah. Yes.
So yeah, and you know, overall, go watch some Italian horror, please.
Yes, Italian horror is pretty cool.
Please go watch. Please go watch Zombie. It's so good from Lucio Fulci. It has some of the greatest scenes and some of the greatest violence from a movie you'll ever watch. Some of the stuff, his Italian stuff, is outstanding. Go
watch Black Sunday. Yeah, definitely
go see some of this stuff. It's really, really good.
Black Sunday is cool. Yeah. But yeah, definitely. I think we'll have to do more giallo films in the future.
I don't see why not.
They're really interesting. Yeah. You never see why not.
Let's watch more.
Okay. So next up is No One Gets Out Alive.
Not.
And then Heads
not
Up.
Not the line from The Doors. One of my favorite songs.
No, not the line from The Doors. The actual movie, that just came out this year. No One Gets Out Alive. And after that, we'll be taking a 2-episode or 4-week break. So just be prepared for that, everybody.
You guys will have to live
without us.
We'll
be taking
a
winter break.
We'll still be around. We're not going anywhere. It's okay. Don't worry.
Yep. Just a midwinter break. We'll be back.
Listen to our other episodes.
But first, No One Gets Out Alive. And you got old episodes to listen to and catch up on. You've got it. You've got all sorts of stuff to catch up on. So we're good. I think you'll be fine. So don't forget, you can follow, subscribe to the podcast, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. I always call it iTunes, but it's Apple Podcasts now. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever the heck you're listening, so that more people can find us. It's really important. It helps other people find the show. So if you like it, we really appreciate you rating it. I mean, if you don't like it, please feel free to rate it too.
Yes,
but if you do like it, we especially appreciate you rating it because it will help other people find the show. And don't forget to send us your movie suggestions, your thoughts on the movies we've watched, whatever you want to say to us at thescarymovieproject@gmail.com. And you can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram at The Scary Movie Project. Peace out.
Have a wonderful evening.
The Scary Movie Project Podcast is produced by Tara Garwood and Matt Lowledge. Learn more at thescarymovieproject.com.
Stay connected with The Scary Movie Project. Visit our website, thescarymovieproject.com, at The Scary Movie Project on Instagram and Facebook, and email us at thescarymovieproject@gmail.com.